Morning. It's good to see each of you. I will remind you that I happen to know that each of you got an extra hour of sleep last night. So hopefully we can all sort of agree to stay awake to my little talk. Great. My little talk is entitled Actions and Beliefs. Now, if you've never seen the movie Dead Man Walking, do yourself a favor and watch it. Let me warn you, though, as I remember it, there are some graphic scenes and strong language in it, but it is powerful. It's the story of Sister Helen Perjean, played by Susan Sarandon, who one day in 1982 receives a letter from Matthew Pincelet, which was played by Sean Penn, a death row inmate in the Louisiana State Penitentiary. Now, after meeting Matthew, who's scheduled to be executed soon for the rape and murder of two teenagers, Sister Helen agrees to serve as his spiritual counselor and see what she can do to possibly help stay the execution. However, Matthew's claims to innocence as the movie goes on seem very shaky at best, and it becomes clear that he is somewhat of a reprehensible, amoral racist. Now, one of the interesting things to me about this movie is that everyone thinks that this is a movie about Matthew. After all, he is the dead man walking. But for me, this is Sister Helen's story. And the story, it's the story of how one person's spiritual beliefs and the application of those beliefs in real life can change the world. Now, while Sister Helen was not able to help Matthew receive an appeal from the corrupt justice system, an appeal I might add he probably deserved, she was able to appeal to his better self. And in the end, Matthew met the electric chair only after admitting the places he had fallen short in life. And with Sister Helen there, he did not have to die alone. Now, as I remember it, that is where the movie ends. But it's not where the story ends. You see, Sister Helen continued to work with death row inmates, including talking with families of the victims. One of the families are now advocates for victims' family rights. Helen herself wrote the book that the movie was based upon. She founded an organization called Survive that helps victims' families who live in inner cities. Her story was even picked up by ABC News, and she was given a national platform for challenging the idea that corporate punishment is somehow noble and good. In that interview, she talked about a prayer vigil that she attended for the victims of Matthew. At that vigil, the father of one of the teenagers told her that as he looked at his child's body, he knew that he had already forgiven whomever had killed his child. Much of this country's progress in struggling with the question of the death penalty has roots in the work that Sister Helen and others like her have done. It's work that stems out of a person's belief system and the application of those beliefs, the kind of application of beliefs that can change the world. The wording in that last sentence is actually important. The application of beliefs can change the world. You see, while most of us can certainly easily confess along with Dr. Seuss's Horton that I meant what I said and I said what I meant, doing what we say can sometimes be another thing altogether. Buddhist monk Thich Nhat Hanh once said, our actions are the ground upon which we stand. Now, not only is it true, but it should serve to remind us that it's not our thoughts, emotions, and words that define us, but the concrete behavior we put out into the world. As we are seeing almost daily in political news, The problem with words is that you can use them to obscure the truth just as easily as you can use them to clarify it. That's not to say, though, that words aren't powerful. As we've discussed before, they can literally reshape the way that our brains work. With children in particular, the right or wrong words from a person who is a respected authority can actually deeply impact the direction of the rest of their lives. But the reality is that study after study have confirmed children are much more likely to imitate parental behavior than to simply follow parental commands or instructions. See, you know, as parents, we typically try diligently to teach children to behave morally, which typically means as a reflection of our own personal belief system. Yet, we are surprised when they act counter to those beliefs. Frequently, what we aren't realizing is that we are expecting them to act more in line with our belief system than we do ourselves. In particular, we don't always realize how we are unknowingly teaching them to behave through our own actions. Some psychologists even say that the most common way we teach our children to behave immorally is by judging and punishing them. For example, many parents will lecture their children about the importance of being nice to people. Then, when they see their own child being mean to someone, they make a judgment about the situation and reprimand and punish the guilty child. What they think they are teaching the child is how important it is to be nice to people. But what their actions may be teaching the child is that if people don't behave the way you tell them to, it's their job to judge and punish them. Because, as I said, children are much more likely to imitate parental behavior than to simply follow parental commands and instructions. As a matter of fact, one study out of University College London shows that seeing someone do something sets off a very specific area in the brain. And when you compare that to a brain that simply received commands or instructions, the brain was significantly more active when observing actions. Not just for children. The same held true for adults as well. However, and unfortunately, our intellectual, analytic culture has grown so reliant on language that when confronted with a discrepancy between words and actions, many of us tend to trust what was said about what has been done over what our own eyes and even our own hearts tell us has been done. The reality is we should trust a person's actions. Person's actions over their words if you really want to know who they are. One reason that words obscure the truth is that you don't have to actually feel something deeply to say that you feel it deeply. You don't have to believe something is true to say that it is true. You might even believe what you're saying, but your actions will always betray you. The difficult truth is that it is your actions that become your destiny. Not your thoughts, feelings, or intentions. Your actions. My takeaway from all of this is that the best way to teach moral behavior is not by preaching morality or punishing immorality, but by living morally, not unlike Sister Helen. We need to work more diligently on practicing what we preach, so to speak. I'll conclude with a favorite story about one of my favorite people. Reporters and city officials had gathered in a Chicago railroad station one afternoon in 1953. The person that they were meeting was the 1952 Nobel Prize winner. Anyone want to take a guess? Nah, that's okay. I didn't either. A few minutes after the train came to a stop, a giant man, 6'4", bushy hair, large mustache, stepped out from the train. Cameras started flashing. City officials approached him, hands outreached. Various people began to tell him how honored they were to meet him. Man politely thanked them and then, obviously looking over their heads, asked if he could be excused for a moment. He quickly walked through the crowd until he reached the side of an elderly woman who was struggling with two large suitcases. He picked up the bags with a smile, helped escort her carefully to her bus, and watched her get on and made sure she was safe. And after helping her aboard, he wished her a safe journey. And he returned to the greeting party. He had simply apologized, "Sorry to have kept you waiting." Now, the man was Dr. Albert Schweitzer, the famous missionary doctor who had spent his life helping the poor in Africa. And in response to Schweitzer's actions, one member of the reception committee said with great admiration to the reporter standing next to him, "That was the first time I ever saw a sermon walk."